Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Spill the Beans, a candid conversational piece on all things life and career. My name is Ty Blair, Executive Director of the awesome nonprofit organization When You Give a Bean Water, a collective hub of resources for families of color to utilize on their own terms. And for this episode, I'm going to be diving into the wonderful career of chefs. Now, I'm a foodie, so this is like near and dear to my heart. So I'm really excited to break down this career for you guys this episode. All right, so BLS has it listed under chefs and head cooks. So chefs and head cooks oversee the daily food preparation at restaurants and other places where food is served. They direct kitchen staff and handle any food-related concerns. Chefs and head cooks typically do the following. They check the freshness of food and ingredients. They supervise and coordinate activities of cooks and other food preparation workers. They develop recipes and determine how to present dishes. They plan menus and ensure the quality of meals. They inspect supplies, equipment, and work areas for cleanliness and functionality. They hire, train, and supervise cooks and other food preparation workers. They order and maintain an inventory of food and supplies. They monitor sanitation practices and follow kitchen safety standards. Chefs and head cooks use a variety of kitchen and cooking equipment, including step-in coolers, high-quality knives, meat slicers, and grinders. They also have access to large quantities of meat, spices, and produce. Some chefs use scheduling and purchasing software to help them in their administrative tasks. Chefs who run their own restaurant or catering business are often busy with kitchen and office work. Some chefs use social media to promote their business by advertising new menu items or addressing patrons' reviews. Now, I know that for a fact because I have a lot of chefs or just people on social media that do, random recipes and meals, and I'm always drawn to that. So that's to me the best way to, if not just the pinnacle, to be able to showcase, the things that you like to cook, the things that you like to make. So even if you are on the ground starting up, social media is definitely a good option to start with. The following are examples of types of chefs and head cooks. So you have executive chefs, head cooks, and chefs de cuisine. They are responsible primarily for overseeing the operation of a kitchen. They coordinate the work of sous chefs and other cooks who prepare most of the meals. Executive chefs also have many duties beyond the kitchen. They design the menu, review food and beverage purchases, and often train cooks and other food preparation workers. Some executive chefs primarily handle administrative tasks and may spend less time in the kitchen. Now, the other one is called sous chefs, and they are ki the kitchen's second in command. They supervise the restaurant's cooks, prepare meals, and report results to the head chefs. In the absence of the head chef, sous chefs run the kitchen. As far as their work environment, they work in restaurants, hotels, and other food service establishments. All of the cooking and food preparation areas in these facilities must be kept clean and sanitary. Chef and head cooks usually stand for long periods and work in a fast-paced environment. Some self-employed chefs run their own restaurants or catering businesses, and their work may be more stressful. For example, outside the kitchen, they often spend many hours managing all aspects of the business to ensure that bills and salaries are paid and that the business is profitable. Chefs and head cooks risk injury in kitchens, which are usually crowded and potentially dangerous. Common hazards include burns from hot ovens, falls on slippery floors, and cuts from knives and other sharp objects. But these injuries are seldom serious. To reduce the risk of harm, workers often wear long sleeve shirts and non-slip shoes. Most chefs and head cooks work full-time, including early mornings, late evenings, weekends, and holidays. Some work more than 40 hours per week. So this definitely has to be a job, a career that you're passionate about. Seems like at any time, you pretty much have to be ready to cook. So if that's something that you love doing, it's like second nature to you, then this definitely would be a career that you would want to look into. All right. So education-wise, chef and head cooks are typically required to have a high school diploma or equivalent to enter the occupation. Although they are not always required to have post-secondary education, many attend programs at community colleges, technical schools, culinary arts schools, and four-year colleges. Students in culinary programs spend most of their time in kitchens practicing their cooking skills. Programs cover all aspects of kitchen work, including menu planning, food sanitation procedures, and purchasing and inventory methods. Most programs also require students to gain experience in a commercial kitchen through an internship or apprenticeship program. Chefs and head cooks often start by working in other positions, such as line cooks, learning cooking skills from the chefs they work for. Many spend years working in kitchens before gaining enough experience to be promoted to chef or head cook position. So it's definitely one of those careers where you have to kind of work your way up the ranks. You can start out either as line cook, sous chefs, and then work your way eventually to head cook, head chef, or executive chef, head cook. Some chefs and head cooks train on the job where they learn the same skills as in formal education program. Some train in mentorship programs where they work under the direction of an experienced chef. Executive chefs, head cooks, and sous chefs who work in upscale restaurants often have many years of training and experience. Chefs and head cooks also may learn through apprenticeship programs sponsored by professional culinary institutes, industry associations, or trade unions. The American Culinary Federation accredits many training programs and sponsors apprenticeships through these programs. Some of the apprenticeship programs are registered with the U.S. Department of Labor. Apprenticeship programs generally combine instruction and on-the-job training. Apprentices typically receive both instruction and paid on-the-job training. Instruction usually covers food sanitation and safety, basic knife skills, and equipment operation. Apprentices spend the rest of their training learning practical skills in a commercial kitchen under a chef's supervision. Some states and localities require chefs and head cooks to have a food handler certification. Although not required, other types of certification may lead to advancement and higher pay. The American Culinary Federation certifies various levels of chefs, such as certified sous chefs and certified executive chefs. Certification standards are based primarily on work experience and formal training. Now, some important qualities to have if you're interested in becoming a chef. You should have business skills. Executive chefs and chefs who run their own restaurant need to know how to budget for supplies, set prices, and manage workers so that the restaurant is profitable. You should have communication skills. Chefs must convey their instructions clearly and effectively to staff so that patrons' orders are prepared correctly. Creativity. Chefs and head cooks need to develop and prepare interesting and innovative recipes. Dexterity. Chefs and head cooks need agility to handle knives properly for cutting, chopping, and dicing. Leadership skills. Chefs and head cooks must be able to motivate kitchen staff and to develop constructive and cooperative working relationships. Physical stamina. Chefs and head cooks often work long shifts and sometimes spend entire evenings on their feet, overseeing the preparation and serving of meals. Sense of taste and smell. Chefs and head cooks must have a keen sense of taste and smell in order to inspect food quality and to design meals that their patrons will enjoy. And finally, time management skills. Chefs and head cooks must ensure efficiency in meal preparation and service, especially during busy hours. Now, the nitty-gritty pay. So the median annual wage for chefs and head cooks were $56,520 in May of 2022. The lowest 10% earned less than $33,750, while the highest 10% earners earned, sorry, whereas the highest 10% earned more than $91,520. In May 2022, the median annual wage for chefs and head cooks in the top industries in which they worked were as follows. Amusement, gambling, and recreational industries was $62,930. Traveler accommodation was $61,630. Special food services was $61,210. And restaurants and other eating places was $52,830. The level of pay for chefs and head cooks varies by region and employer. Pay is usually highest in upscale restaurants and hotels, where many executive chefs work, as well as in major metropolitan and resort areas. As far as the job outlook, employment of chefs and head cooks is projected to grow 5% from 2022 to 2032, faster than the average for all occupations. Income growth is expected to result in greater demand for high-quality dishes at a variety of dining venues. As a result, more restaurants and other dining places are expected to open to satisfy consumer desire for dining out. Consumers are continuing to demand healthier meals made from scratch in restaurants, cafeterias, grocery stores, and other places that sell food. To ensure high-quality dishes, these establishments hire experienced chefs to oversee food preparation. All right, so that's the nitty-gritty, the statistics for chefs and cooks. As far as the demographics go, in 2021, we had 52.6% of chefs and head cooks in the workforce were white. We had 17.2% that were Asian, 12.6% that were Black, and 24.5% that were Hispanic. As far as the men and women or the gender, we had, 456,373 people, with 22.5% being women and 77.5% being men. So definitely a white male dominated field for sure. The demographics definitely speak for that. Now, I would love to share with you guys a couple articles that I found of some testimonials, experiences from a couple of people that work in the field of being chefs. One in particular, his name is Jesse Jackson III, and he is a pastry chef. So I'm just going to read a couple of snippets from his article as far as his experiences being an African American pastry chef. So he said, being an African American male in the hospitality industry is difficult in its own right, but being a person of color in the fine dining sector, it is a rarity, especially in pastry. The majority of my career has been spent in fine dining restaurants, and I'd say 98% of the time, I was the only Black person in the entire restaurant. I was often mistaken for a dishwasher or prep cook. I was asked multiple times, "You're the pastry chef?" as if they didn't believe me. I would get a look from people that would make me feel 2 inches tall, a look that made me feel like I was less than. It's hard to explain that look to those who haven't experienced it themselves, and some people may never be looked at that way. But if it ever happens or has happened to you, you know what I'm talking about. When a chef looks for a job, They do an unpaid test called a stage, in which they have the opportunity to show their cooking skills. I went on a stage, and before it began, I sat down with the pastry chef and pastry sous chef to go over my resume. Apart from getting the look multiple times, every other sentence was, "Well, you don't seem to have experience doing this or that or that or this." But I was still able to do the stage. I completed every task that they gave me perfectly, quickly, and as directed. At the end, their looks and energy had changed. "Wow, Jesse, you had a really great stage." They offered me the job on the spot. I said I had a few other stages to complete before making a decision, and I ultimately took a position elsewhere. To prove my worth to people who had expressed objections to my face was a great feeling, but also a discerning at the same time, because I realized I would have to do that again and again. So it seems like it's a tough industry to crack into, especially with it being white dominated, but just keep persevering. So he said I was working 80 to 90 hours a week. Wow, take that in. 80 to 90 hours a week. We normally do 80 to 90 hours, 2 to 2.5 weeks. So definitely a lot of hours, definitely. I was the first one there and the last one to leave, while everyone else in the kitchen worked 50 to 60. I once worked 25 hours straight. I dedicated my life, my mental capacity, and well-being to giving 10,000% effort at my job to prove myself worthy. I still got the, "You didn't get the email," or "I'd be the last person to find out some news that everyone else already knew and had reacted to." So in this final statement, he said, "Is it worth it? For some, no. For me, yes. I've always been one to find a way to turn an obstacle into an opportunity. So instead of struggling for a seat at the table, I built my own table. I left the restaurant to start my own business. I only have to prove to this man I see when I look in the mirror." So it seems like entrepreneurship is definitely an avenue, especially when you're getting that experience that you need. If you want to go at, go that route, you can work your way up the chain and then decide if you want to continue in that field or if you want to branch out and do something on your own. So both options are definitely there. Deborah Van Treese, the article is entitled "Being a Black Chef in a White-Led Restaurant Industry Isn't Easy, But I'm Not Giving Up." So Deborah states that growing up in Kansas City, I was the only kid who didn't order kids' meals. I ordered full-on entrees. I fell in love with cooking in seventh grade home economics. Those fluffy French omelets got me. Beating the egg whites, watching them come to a peak, folding in the fillings, it was all so cool. I didn't realize you could do that much with an egg. So I went home and made fluffy omelets for everybody. Then I started looking at cookbooks, playing with chicken pot pie, stir fries. My mom caught on and would let me do the grocery shopping and make dinner while she was at work. I'd only get so much money each trip, but I learned to clip coupons and shop smart so that whatever cash I had left over would be my allowance. I didn't realize she was teaching me some real life lessons there, but she was. So that's awesome that since a kid, she kind of knew that that was her niche and that was something that she loved to do. So, and like she said, like she didn't realize that her mom, by doing those things, allowing her the autonomy to go to the grocery store and buy things to be able to cook for them, was actually preparing her for that future career that she was going to, be a part of. So that's pretty cool. "I always wanted to be a chef, but it never seemed possible because I'd never seen a Black woman in that role. All I had to look up to was Julia Child and a bunch of white men. So instead, I moved to Atlanta, became a flight attendant, traveled the world, and ate everything I could find. Paella in Spain, adobo in the Philippines. It was exciting getting to know different cultures through their food, In my free time, I'd recreate recipes for friends and families, dreaming of a career where all I did was cook. So this is something that's really important. There are times where you may not get directly to your destination, to the career of your choice. In her case, she decided to become a flight attendant, but it actually helped in a sense because it exposed her to many different types of food and cultures. And that was probably something that she was later able to incorporate into her own style, her own cooking style. So just because you kind of pivot and do a different career, if your passion and your heart is still in that career that you've had either since you were a child or just something that kind of sparks, gives you that spark of interest inside of you, definitely don't feel like it's over. There's always a chance to pivot. I was in my mid-30s and raising a 2-year-old daughter by the time I finally enrolled in culinary school. There were no scholarship opportunities for people my age, so I doubled up on classes, finished in a year, valedictorian with a 4.0 GPA. That's awesome. And got a job as a sous chef straight out of graduation. 2 months into the job, we were catering this huge corporate event and we were behind on prep. The chef went home, but I opted to stay through the night. By the time he showed up the next morning, I had everything lined up and ready to go. I thought he'd be thankful, but instead he told me, "I never would have hired an N-word like you had I known how good you really were." Then he said, "You can run back and tell everybody I said that, but it'll be your word against mine." And that's exactly what happened. There was no recourse. I quit the next day. So that's very jarring, but this happens in many areas of corporate America. When you're Black in America, racism is a constant. And as a queer Black woman working in restaurants, I've experienced it all firsthand. On my better days, I find happiness in the simple acts of cooking, methodically chopping vegetables, pan frying chicken in cast iron like my grandmother taught me, following the handwritten chocolate chip cookie recipe my mom left behind after she died. In the kitchen, I can sometimes forget that there are people out there who see my skin color as a threat. Then I get the wake-up call. Maybe it's a small, like a put down from a white chef who feels threatened by Black talent. Or maybe it's big, like a Black man murdered on camera for using a counterfeit bill. And suddenly everything that's ever happened to me and the people I love based on the color of our skin comes flooding back. When things have been so wrong for so long, you tiptoe around them so they don't hurt you directly. And then one day they do. So much like Black chefs themselves, soul food has never gotten the respect that it deserves. People play down the influence Black, African Americans had on the food of the US and then try to take our traditions away from us. They cook soul food but call it Southern food instead. When the whole sustainability thing got big, I watched the dishes we've been cooking for centuries become the popular items on all the white Southern chefs' menus as if they had never existed before. As Black chefs, we're always being asked to explain ourselves. I have to explain why I'm putting macaroni in my paella, even though I learned from a lady in Northern Spain who does the exact same thing. And then, if we stick to what we grew up on, we get asked, "Why is your food always soul food? Is that all you can do?" Nobody asks an Italian chef that. Maybe the question should be, "How do you do what you do?" Of course, there are Black restaurateurs all over the country who have succeeded in spite of everything. We started from the ground and worked our way up without any help. And everyone loves those stories. But when it's time for the neighborhood restaurant crawl, we don't get invited because we don't draw the type of crowd the other chefs are looking for. So they exclude us. So it seems to be like a very, what do you call it? A very clicky, I guess, a niche type industry where you have to kind of claw your way to be of somebody. So the food industry has always needed more financing and mentorship for people of color. And I think that goes across the board. I feel like with every career, especially creative or independent career that I've researched, financing, mentorship, all of those things seem to be the main things that we are lacking. So that's definitely something that we definitely have to pool our resources together and be able to help each other out. Now there's an army of young people out there. They are frustrated, but they are educated and strong and smart. They're leaving jobs where they're treated badly and starting their own things. Restaurants and pop-ups and cooking shows on Instagram, that's their pivot. And it's not just because of COVID-19, it's because opportunities have never been offered to them. So they're learning to exist outside of the traditional power structures, but shaking up the institutions. So that's powerful. Like I said, there's so many opportunities and ways now, probably than ever, where you're able to put your own put your own out there without having to depend on being financed or having to work in some fancy upscale dining restaurant. You can kind of start in your home and post things on social media and kind of get your name out there. So that's pretty cool. All right, so I wanted to share some very awesome key people that have been paving the way for this wonderful and awesome career of chefdom, which is what I'm going to call it. This awesome career of chefdom. So I am going to present on my screen some amazing chefs and just to kind of give you guys a little bit of insight into some of the chefs that were before us and are coming after us as well. So let me share my screen with you guys. So this is James Hemings. James Hemings was born in Virginia in 1765. At 8 years old, he became Thomas Jefferson's slave through an inheritance. He was the first African American to train as a chef in France, and he introduced European style macaroni and cheese, French fries, creme brulee, and ice cream to America. This is Zephyr Wright. She was a personal chef for President Lyndon B. Johnson. She told her firsthand stories about discrimination to Johnson, which is thought to have influenced his signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Wright was born and raised in Marshall, Texas. In 1942, she started working for the Johnsons as a maid and cook to help pay her way through college. She ended up staying with the family until 1969. This is Abby Fisher. She was one of the first Black cookbook authors. Her cookbook was originally published in 1881 and reprinted in 1995. Fisher was born into slavery in South Carolina in 1832. She learned to cook in plantation kitchens in the South, where she developed her distinctive style. After the Civil War, she moved to San Francisco and opened a preserves business. The title of her book is What Mrs. Fisher Knows About Old Southern Cooking. This is Etna Lewis, one of the most influential figures in modern Southern cooking. Born in 1916 in Freetown, Virginia, Etna Lewis grew up on a farm where she learned to cook. She began working at Cafe Nicholson in Midtown Manhattan, and she soon became a local legend. She left Cafe Nicholson in 1954 and started catering and teaching cooking classes in the American Museum of Natural History. She wrote a couple cookbooks, with The Taste of Country Cooking being her most significant cookbook, expanding on her Southern roots and how she would grow, harvest, and cook what they planted in Freetown. It is celebrated for its focus on the simplicity of Southern cooking, of Southern food, and emphasis of farm-to-table eating. And this is Brenda's Barbecue Pit. This restaurant was founded by Larry and Geraldine Bethune. and it became a center for civil rights in Montgomery, Alabama. They first opened the restaurant in 1942. Back then, it was a nightclub, the Siesta Club, that sold food. It later became Brenda's, named for one of their daughters. The restaurant became an unofficial center for the local civil rights movement, holding NAACP meetings, printing flyers, and planning protests. Now, this is Robert W. Lee. Many Black chefs stand on the shoulders of Robert W. Lee. In 1939, he became an executive chef at the Harrisburg Hotel. There, he created the menus and trained hundreds of Black chefs. During World War II, Lee received a medal from former President Franklin D. Roosevelt for teaching many troops to cook as a mess sergeant and instructor. This is Mariah Russell. Mariah Russell is the first Black woman ever to receive a Michelin star in September 2019. So, when your restaurant is awarded a Michelin star, it is a sign that you've succeeded at the highest level as a chef. Two stars and your restaurant is excellent. Three stars and your restaurant is worth traveling to. And it's funny, it's called Michelin because the Michelin brothers, who were Andre and Edward, they started the Michelin Guide in the 1900s. The French entrepreneurs had started a tire company 11 years ago or 11 years earlier, and they decided that a ratings guide for hotels and restaurants would compel the limited number of drivers to use up their tires and buy more. So, yes, the Michelin that makes or breaks fine dining establishments around the world is the same Michelin that manufactures tires. And she was the first Black woman to ever receive that award. This is Patrick Clark. He was the first Black chef to win a James Beard Best Chef Award. Now, the James Beard Award is like the Oscars of the restaurant industry. And in 2019 and 2020, six Black chefs won in those categories. So the categories are for Best Chef or Outstanding Restaurant. So that's pretty dope. Clark was offered the position of executive chef at the Tavern on the Green, one of the country's most successful restaurants at the time. Clark then took the kitchen of then took over the kitchen of Washington, D.C.'s prestigious Hay Adams Hotel, which led, excuse me, which led to him later catering meals at the White House. This is Lazarus Lynch. In 2021, Lazarus Lynch became the first Black queer chef to cook at the Met Gala. He's a two-time Chopped champion, and he is the founder of the culinary brand Son of a Southern Chef and the author of a cookbook, Son of a Southern Chef, Cook with Soul. This is Kwame Onwuachi. I hope I'm saying his last name right, but he is the winner of Top Chef Season 13. In 2019, he published a memoir titled Notes from a Young Black Chef. He has been named one of Food and Wine's Best New Chefs, Esquire Magazine's 2019 Chef of the Year, the Times 100 Next 2019 list, and is a 30 under 30 honoree by both Zagat and Forbes. After training at the Culinary Institute of America, he opened five restaurants before the age of 30, including the groundbreaking Afro-Caribbean restaurant Kith and Kin, or Kith Kin, in Washington, D.C. And this young guy, his name is Omari McQueen. He is the youngest award-winning vegan chef in the UK and the CEO and founder of Dipalicious. Omari started Dipalicious at 8 years old after posting a YouTube channel where he filmed himself making his very own vegan pizza. He has won three notable awards: the True Little Hero Award, for being the Entrepreneur Hero Under 12, 2018 by Cause for Children Limited, the Compassionate Kids Award for using his entrepreneurial flair to help animals, and the Proud and Gifted Award in recognition of being a vegan chef and a youth empowerment speaker, encouraging other children to become entrepreneurs. And finally, this young woman here is Leah Chase. And Leah Chase, also known as the Queen of Creole Cuisine, was the executive chef and co-owner of Dookie Chase Restaurant in New Orleans, one of the most historic restaurants in America. Chase has received many awards, both for her culinary genius and her community service. So definitely props, shout outs. I know I didn't go over every single amazing chef out here, but I definitely wanted to highlight just a few of them for you guys. And I hope you enjoyed that. So that concludes this episode of Spill the Beans. Again, as always, thank you guys for tapping in and tuning in every month. You can always, again, follow me on all social media platforms at Give a Bean Water. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and of course, YouTube. So as always, thank you guys for tapping in and staying connected with me. And until next time.